Good afternoon. Illinois Appellate Court, First District Court is now in session. The First Division, the Honorable Justice Michael B. Hyman presiding, case number 20-1173, People versus Martin Roman.
Good afternoon. I apologize. You can tell which one of us had the technology problem because my background is not like the others. And so it is me, and I apologize profusely. My computer just would not cooperate this morning. I'm Justice Michael Hyman with the uncooperative computer, and I'm on a different one now. With me is Justice Aurelia Puchinski and Justice Carl Walker. We are going to proceed as if we were in the courtroom. Each side has 20 minutes. Mr. Bernstein, you can reserve time for rebuttal to let us know when you introduce yourself. And we will be asking questions. Please finish whatever you're saying. And then if you would proceed to our question, I'd appreciate it. Please introduce yourselves.
Joshua Bernstein, B-E-R-N-S-T-E-I-N, for appellant Martin Roman.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. Assistant State's Attorney Whitney Bond on behalf of the people.
Thank you. Any questions before we proceed? Mr. Bernstein, how long do you want for rebuttal?
5 minutes should do, Your Honor. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, you may proceed.
May it please the court and counsel, if you strip away all of the co-defendants and procedural history of this case, it's very, very simple. We're on remand, and
we know the facts. We've read the briefs and we've read the record. So here's my question. Give us your best argument as to why we should reverse.
I will do that, Your Honor. That's what I intended to do. You don't need to go very far to reverse in this case. In fact, it's very, very simple. In his post-conviction petition, Mr. Roman adequately alleged an arguable case of ineffective assistance of counsel. That would be plea counsel. In that plea counsel misadvised him about the sentencing range he faced. The poor advice of plea counsel was not corrected by the court in its admonishments or by the state's attorney at the time Mr. Roman was admonished. And in fact, twice-
When you say it wasn't correct, I mean, did the judge know that his counsel made a error?
No, Your Honor, but actually-
It wasn't correct.
Right, but everybody made an error here. Counsel told him 60 years. The court told him 60 years. Had counsel told Mr. Roman, this is obviously a hypothetical because it didn't happen, but had counsel said, hey, the normal range is 60 years, but you, because of your previous sentence, you should max out at 32 years here. This would be entirely different.
You didn't mention another person in the courtroom, the state's attorney's office. They didn't correct it either.
Well, that's correct, Your Honor.
So everybody in the courtroom who was an attorney, let it stand.
As I said in our brief, Your Honor, all three lawyers in the courtroom that day had the wrong sentencing range. And in fact, in their brief, the state concedes this twice, that he was misadvised. That is objectively unreasonable to advise your client in a plea situation with the wrong sentencing range. As far as prejudice goes, really, Mr. Roman said it in his brief. He would have elected to go to trial if he knew his limit was 32 years. The plea he entered into in this case sounds good when you think you're facing 60 years. It sounds completely different when you're facing 32 years. And as I said in the briefs, there's the additional factors of Your Honor, Justice Hyman, you authored the opinion knocking out the gang evidence that infected the first trial. And there's a still kind of unresolved issue out there with respect to whether there was a Brady violation with Fernando Garcia's testimony, whether this whether this testimony actually would either lead to a new trial. I'm going to just say I don't know the status right now of Ismael Morales's case, but I do know that he is at least at the second stage in post-conviction proceedings. And if they have not filed a Rule 651 in that case, they will be doing that soon. And that will give us exactly the roadmap for how Fernando Garcia's testimony would affect Mr. Roman's chances at trial, because Morales and Roman face the same.
The issue with Mr. Morales, whatever that is, we don't need to decide it, whether that's, that isn't really necessary for us to reverse, correct?
I agree with that, Your Honor. It is not. I think the effect of the removal of the gang evidence increased Mr. Roman's chances on retrial, notwithstanding anything else. And therefore, as he says in his post-conviction petition, he would have elected trial if he knew he faced 32 years, but he did not do so. And it's really that simple. And if that's not enough for Your Honors, there is also counsel's threat to withdraw. But I don't even know if you need to get that far. I mean, I guess it's the icing on this terrible cake, but the threat to withdraw if Mr. Roman went to trial just compounds the unreasonableness of counsel's representation at that stage, number one. And also, in a sense, it kind of affects the prejudice in that, as we said in our brief, and as he said in his petition, he thought he'd be facing the state's attorneys alone that day. And I know in their brief, the state said, well, there are all these other things that he could have done. That's true, but this is the first stage. And what he alleged was, if I didn't take the deal, I'd be on my own and have to represent myself. That's what he believed at the time he took.
That's exactly what the state is arguing, that he never said anything. When the judge asked him, was he pleading guilty freely and voluntarily? He said, yes, he was. He didn't tell the judge that, well, my counsel has threatened me that he's going to withdraw from the case if I didn't plead guilty. He went along. And that's why the state is arguing that there's no evidence in the record to support the claim.
Your Honor, it's true. He didn't complain. But on the other hand, he didn't know at the time he was pleading that he actually only faced 32 years. In his petition, he pled two things. He later learned that he did not face 60 years. And he pled, he later learned, of course, that he should have, there's that counsel should have advised him on a motion to withdraw. And as far as the complaints go, Your Honor.
Without the plea, he could have faced 32 years. So the state's argument is that, well, his counsel got him a good deal here with the 24 years.
The counsel got him a good deal if it was a 60-year sentence. The deal looks very different if it's a 32-year sentence, first of all. And second of all, Your Honor, as we cited in our brief, the Lee versus the United States is an example of a case in which and this goes for Padilla versus Kentucky and all of these guilty plea cases, there are considerations beyond mere sentencing. Now, I know in this case it is sentencing, but there's a consideration beyond your chances to win. And he said in his petition that he would have taken the chance, and he was deprived of the chance to make a knowing decision whether or not to plead guilty. First of all, because he thought 60 years was the limit. Second of all, because counsel threatened to withdraw and he thought he'd be left high and dry. Whether that all plays out at the second stage is a completely different thing, Your Honors. But right now, where we stand, this is a first stage pleading. He's made a prima facie case of ineffective assistance of counsel. He's made a prima facie case of exactly what he believed at the time of this guilty plea. And he's made a prima facie case that this arguably is not what he would have done. And that's really what this boils down to. there's a lot of speculation in the state's brief about what could have been and what should have been and all that. That's for another stage or another proceeding. It's not here in the pleading. There's nothing in this record that rebuts Mr. Roman's claims.
What about the state's? Oh, go ahead. Sorry. No, go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, I thought you were there. Go ahead, please.
Okay. Yeah. No. But I'm willing to defer to you as the presiding justice. Okay. Well, the state's argument again is that the misadvisement does not rise to the level to create a situation where there's an arguable claim of deficiency. We just simply have a misadvisement here that allegedly came from counsel, because I don't think there's anything on the record that supports counsel having advised him of that. So there is a record that the judge said it, and that as Justice Hyman pointed out, that his counsel didn't correct the judge, and neither did the ASA in the courtroom. But again, that advisement is not enough. So you want to respond to that?
I don't understand that. I'm sorry, Your Honor, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, you're fine. Go ahead.
I don't understand that argument at all. The state cites no case law that says it's effective assistance of counsel to misadvise your client about the sentencing range in a guilty plea proceeding. No case law. And there's no case law that says that this is okay. I mean, I get it. It's not in the record. That's why this is in a post-conviction petition. You have to construe the facts that he's alleging in this in his favor, unless they are rebutted by the record. They're not rebutted by the record. The point of the judge saying 60 years is that it ties in directly. You know, counsel comes to him in jail and says, you're going to get 60 years if you go to trial. He stands up in court. The judge says, you're going to get 60 years if you go to trial. You could get 60 years if you go to trial. The state's attorney stands mute. Counsel stands mute. Everybody thought that he could get 60 years. He did not know he could get 32 years. And the state has conceded that 32 years was the limit based on this record. So I don't understand where they get this idea that that's reasonable representation. That is an error that goes to the fundamental fact of his guilty plea. He didn't even know the sentencing range that he could face. And there's no case that says that. They don't cite anything. This is that's just their supposition. Respectfully, they have nothing supporting that claim, and there's nothing in the record that rebuts it. And in fact, they've conceded, as I said repeatedly, that this was an error. So as Justice Hyman said, every lawyer in that courtroom was wrong. And that's what Mr. Roman had to go with. And he was facing 60 years if he went to trial, according to his own lawyer. And in fact, his lawyer told him the state said they would go for 60 years. They would go for the max if he forced them to go to trial again. And, you know, what do? You take the plea deal, and it seems reasonable until you find out that, in fact, that's like almost twice as long as what he could have gotten. So I don't see how that's reasonable, Your Honor. It's an error of law on the part of every lawyer in that courtroom.
What about the state's response that the trial evidence was overwhelming? The outcome was almost a given.
Well, Your Honor, in the prior iteration of People versus Martin Roman, you yourself said that without the gang evidence in this case, the evidence is not overwhelming. It's the evidence of three witnesses who witnessed this allegedly from across the street at 1 a.m. in the dark with patchy lighting. And even with those witnesses, Mr. Roman, had he known it would have been 32-year maximum, which he'd already been sentenced to, he was willing to take that chance again. And even if counsel told, as his petition says, when counsel told him he had a 50-50 chance, he was willing to take that chance. I don't think that's unreasonable when, if you understand that you're capped at your previous sentence, it's not unreasonable to say, let's try it. Let's go for it. That's, I think that's patent in the pleading. It's there. It's on the face of the pleading. He would have done it. And that's really what boils down to. This is why I'm asking you to reverse.
The original offer was 27 years. He rejected that. Then when the 24 years were offered, he accepted it. And the state's argument is that it would have been unreasonable at that point to reject the 24 years, knowing that he could still get 32.
Well, he rejected it because his lawyer said, if you don't take this deal, I'm going to walk, Justice Walker. I mean, he accepted it because, as he said, if he went to trial, his lawyer threatened to withdraw and he would be, I'll quote it here, petitioner would be on his own and would have to represent himself.
And now the state's argument is that there's no evidence in the record that the lawyer ever advised him he would walk.
Well, wait, there's no evidence on the record that the lawyer ever said, no, Your Honor, it's not 60 years, the max is 32, right?
Both of Your Honors are correct. There's no evidence of either of those things. And that is why this is a matter properly brought up in a post-conviction.
So I can understand. I understand why if somebody were given the true choice between going to trial and rolling the dice and maybe being found not guilty or serving the same 32 years that you're already sentenced to, 50-50, I'd say, all right, let's roll the dice. And we've already said in the first case, the evidence was not overwhelming. You had one witness who heard a voice talking on a cell phone and recognized it. You had one witness who saw the defendant talking on his cell phone, didn't see him hit anybody. You have one witness who saw the defendant hitting the factory door, but not the victim. So, you know, I'm still sort of surprised. I mean, to call this evidence underwhelming, I think would be an understatement at this point, if he knew what his odds were. You know, when the odds are 50-50, you take a trial, it's 50-50. You're going to be found guilty, not guilty. Those are the odds, 50-50.
That is exactly our point, Justice Paczynski. This, you know, when we said he had nothing to lose in this case, at that point, had he known the maximum sentence he could get, which is the sentence he'd already received, there was no downside to going to trial, as you just pointed out. Unless Your Honors have any other questions, I could talk about this all day, but we ask that you reverse and remand this for further post-conviction proceedings to develop the claims in Mr. Roman's post-conviction petition. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Ms. Bond.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the court. Again, Assistant State's Attorney Whitney Bond on behalf of the people. It's the people's position that on its face, this petition does not sufficiently allege that remand counsel misadvised him or created a campaign of pressure, because there has to be something more.
Wait. He says it doesn't, but you conceded that what the judge and what happened in the courtroom with regard to the sentencing range is incorrect, correct? Yes or no? You conceded that?
Yes.
Okay, so if that's incorrect, then how does what you just said follow?
Because what we're trying to point out is that this petition on its face is deficient.
Why would it be deficient on its face when
he
has a transcript before the judge, and the judge and the lawyers in the courtroom gave him the wrong range? How can that be insufficient on its face? There's evidence of the transcripts. So what am I missing here?
Well, what also you're missing are any affidavits to attest to the truth of any of these claims. I mean,
yes, he did. He had a verification affidavit, and he had evidence by way of the transcripts. And as you know, the law says he doesn't need to get an affidavit from the attorney he's saying was incompetent in this case, ineffective. So again, I ask you the same question.
We would submit what we offered in our opening brief, that what he could have possibly offered an affidavit from himself attesting to when these
alleged
conversations.
What does he need to do that for? Wait, why would he need to do that when you have the three lawyers in the courtroom saying that the range is up to 60 years? Why would, I don't understand how you can ignore that after saying that that is an incorrect admonition from the judge.
Right, but what we don't have is any sort of attestation that there was any conversations that happened outside of that singular conversation.
It doesn't matter. Does it matter because we do know. Look, first of all, you will agree that it's a low bar on the first stage?
Yes.
Okay. So on the first stage, what we have here is an incorrect, by your own admission, range. We have his attorney standing mute. We have the ASA standing mute. So that tells me, at least, that they all understood this to be up to 60 years. So what more, what affidavit does he need to say? He has presented what the rule provides for first stage to go to second stage. Hasn't he? You're just saying he needs more. You're not saying he didn't provide anything. Are you? Are you saying he provided nothing?
No, what I'm saying is he needs to provide, I don't believe that a verification affidavit that attests that he is an inmate at Lincoln Correctional and that the facts included in the petition, he knew them to be true. I don't think that suffices as an affidavit. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility either to ask remand counsel to provide an affidavit that he too misadvised this.
Well, it may not be a possibility, but the Illinois Supreme Court has said it's not necessary. They don't expect it. It would be a rare occurrence. So you're asking him to, you're asking us to affirm on something that the Illinois Supreme Court has rejected? Is that what we're supposed to do?
I'm asking you to hold this petitioner to the same standard that we hold all first stage post-conviction petitioners. If you had a petitioner who wrote in his petition that I have a witness that would testify to X, Y, and Z and left it at that with no accompanying affidavit, that wouldn't be enough. There should
this
be different standards. I'm
this
sorry?
Is not that. This is not that. Here we have a transcript.
Well, and what I'm saying is that the people's position is that that is not enough. That what we have
what is the people's position then? You say that is not enough. Are you saying, let me try to be specific. You should be very specific. What are they missing? Okay. What I hear you saying they're missing is his own affidavit. Is that what's missing?
That is something that is missing. I'm saying that there are several opportunities for him to provide something more to this
Why does he need to provide that when we have the transcript?
But you also have the record.
Why? What rule, what provision, what case says that the transcript is not enough? Give me some authority.
I have no authority off the top of my head for that. But what I would submit to you is that what this defendant is arguing is rebutted by the record. All well-pled facts is true unless rebutted by the record.
Wait, hold on. You just said something that I find confusing.
Okay.
What he said is rebutted by the record? What are you talking about?
The entirety of his petition is rebutted by the record. What we have here is a plea. This petitioner was asked, did you plead freely? If there was any sort of misadvisement that he had a concern about or any sort of threatened campaign of pressure.
Did the judge use the word threats?
He asked, are you pleading guilty freely? And he said that he was.
The question was freely. Right. The question was freely, having been told and not corrected, what the range is. So, the judge didn't ask him whether he was threatened. And even counsel has said, even that's just this icing on the cake. So you're talking about the icing. Let's talk about the cake. Okay. That's what I'm trying to talk about, the cake. And that's the sentencing range. And you have no case law that says he needs anything else. So I really want to know how we are to get around that. And what's your position for us to ignore this first stage situation, which seems to follow the law as it is in the state of Illinois?
There's nothing in this record that counsel misadvised him. There was on this record that the trial court made a misstatement.
No, wait. Counsel has no obligation to correct a judge that gives a totally incorrect, you even conceded it's incorrect. And the difference, you would agree that 32 versus 60 is a difference of 28 years, correct? And that's a substantial amount of time to be in prison, 28 years, correct?
And so, but what we have is that what was on the record was that there was these ongoing plea negotiations between counsel and the state. So yes, there was a misstatement. There's nothing that I could argue that,
let's use our words carefully. You call it a misstatement. Okay. It's not a mistake. Yes. It's an error. Would you concede it was error?
No.
An error in a misstatement? It was error. Why isn't it an error when the judge says you could get up to 60 years when actually he cannot get more than 32 years? Why is that not an error?
You know what? I don't think this was something that was deliberately done by the trial court.
Who said deliberately? I never used the word deliberately. You're using the word deliberately, and you did so in your brief.
Using it in the context of the answer.
I'm not saying anybody did anything deliberately. That's why it's called an error, right? An error doesn't have to be deliberate, but you won't even concede that it was error.
I can see that it was a misstatement. I don't believe that.
What's the difference between a misstatement and an error? Aren't they the same thing?
Half in one, half in a dozen in the other. I mean, what is happening at the trial court is being in the trial court, there's a lot of moving parts. And what this case has been up and back and came back again. And I think what the trial court looked at it and saw first degree murder and just proceeded kind of in a rote sort of manner. I mean, counsel concedes as well that that could have just been a misstatement, that this could have just been, part of the tenor of the courtroom of that day, that not necessarily anybody was recognizing the case law that says that he couldn't get any more than 32 years. So be it an error or be it a misstatement, I'm not putting those two together, but I would concede that they are the same in my mind. If they're different in the court's mind, then I would say that that was just a misstatement. But there was a lot of discussion that was happening on this record because we know that he started at 32, 27 was an offer, 24 became the final offer. So there was a lot that was going on behind the scenes that is not in the record, that those plea negotiations. So if there was initial misstatement or initial error of terms, certainly that was worked out. And what we don't
worked out. You say it was worked out. That's a very vague. What is it and what was worked out when you have what you call a mistake or error?
What was worked out was the eventual plea and resultant sentence of 24 years. That was what
was worked out under an umbrella of error. There is, we agreed, 24-year difference between going to trial and looking at 60 years or being told the accurate number, which is up to 32 years. And without the, as counsel said, without the gang evidence, this is a new ball game here. And that's what the initial opinion in this case said back in 2013.
Yes.
You would agree that the opinion, despite what you might say in your brief, at this point, are you still contending that it was overwhelming, not even a close case? Are you saying that in light of our decision, which I reread, and which is cited by counsel, particularly, I think it's paragraph 37. How can you say that in light of paragraph 37? Just explain that.
We still stand by a position that the evidence was overwhelming.
That's a position. Okay. How do you reconcile that with paragraph? This is a matter of being candid with a court. This is a matter of reading words of a judge's any judge, doesn't matter, it's mine or anybody else's, but they're words on a paper. And that's what we have to rely on as counsel, accurately telling us what cases stand for. And you're saying that you reject what is already part of this case, that that decision in our decision, paragraph 37, says, given the strong prejudice against street gangs and the likelihood of that effect, if not the purpose of the gang-related evidence was to stir the emotions of the jury, combined with the absence of any relevance to a motive of the witness and so forth, it was a close case. So to say it was overwhelming and not even a close case, and then to say, well, that's your position, aren't you just closing your eyes to that opinion?
No, I would never disrespect the court like that. What I would submit is that—
Please reconcile your statement with what you— I'm lost. I can't understand what you're saying.
What I'm saying is that in light of the court's opinion, that if you take the gang evidence out, you still have three eyewitnesses who knew this defendant. This wasn't a stranger identification. This was somebody—
don't believe when the court said it was a close case, you know, without that evidence, you don't accept that. But you do concede that that's what we said, and that for you to say otherwise in light of the record in this case, isn't there something that doesn't follow there?
No, I'm not sure if I'm actually following you. Are you, because I don't see the gang evidence in the same light that I am rejecting the initial opinion, because I would submit that that is not what I'm doing at all. I'm just pointing out, like I did in my opening brief, that the gang evidence, while there, if you remove it, we still have three eyewitnesses to this defendant who they knew. This wasn't a stranger identification. They knew him. They don't have to testify how they knew him. They knew him from the neighborhood. There doesn't need to be any of the gang evidence brought in. And it is the people's position that these eyewitnesses were credible eyewitnesses who knew him from the neighborhood, knew his family, knew his brother, and watched as this horrible incident occurred. They weren't impeached in any substantial way. I know that there is the Garcia letter, the immigration letter that has come to light. But like we suggested in our opening brief, that it was a very general, generic letter, and that the trier of fact would be able to, you know, see that letter and have judged it for what it's worth. But no, I believe the evidence was still quite overwhelming. And the defendant, I believe, knew that and saw 24 years as a better opportunity. But no, I'm not disrespecting this court's opinion. I just am arguing the state's position that the evidence based on those witnesses was pretty significant.
Okay, and Ms. Bond, before you move on, I want to come back to a different issue here. You raised this in your brief, and I believe more than once. You're saying that the issue is that the allegations that the petitioner is making, Mr. Roman is making, are not supported by the record. And there's no case law that supports your argument there. The argument that our Supreme Court the issue that our Supreme Court has always raised is that it should, that whether or not the information is rebutted by the record. And you seem to flip that to whether or not it's supported on the record. Do you have any case law that you can provide us that supports what you're saying, that the information that the petitioner is providing must be supported by the record? And I ask the question because very often with these allegations, and especially at the first stage, it may even be a situation where there's some new witness that has come along who says that, you know, he was there, he spoke to the police, and they didn't like his story, they never recorded his information into their report, never provided anything. And that would never, or I should say rarely, be supported by the record. And you're using that argument throughout your brief, so help me with that.
I think it's, yes.
Because they're not the same thing. No. Maybe I should start there. Mm-hmm. Do you agree that it's not the same thing? Let's start there.
Not supported
by
the-
Because we have a fundamental problem here. You agree that they're not the same, right?
I agree that they're not the same, yes.
Okay, now
that
go ahead.
Supported by the, yeah, that supported by the record is not the same thing as rebutted by the record. And I think when we're talking at this first stage, you know, What we argued was that this defendant had pled guilty, and that's rebuts all the claims that he was making as to, you know, what had happened during those negotiations. But I don't, to go back to your first question, I don't have the case law that says supported by the record. I don't believe I have it, but I would be happy to, you know, file another brief on that issue.
I want to be clear. We're not asking you to file anything. It's just that our Supreme Court's position has always been, the question is whether or not the allegations are rebutted by the record, and then that may be a basis upon which the trial judge would summarily dismiss the petition, because that the allegation is rebutted. But there's nothing that says that the allegation is not supported by the record that the trial court should summarily dismiss the petition. And I just want to make sure that that was probably just a mistake that you made when you used the term supported throughout your brief, but that's okay. I want to come back to something else. Because on page 17 of your brief, you seem to make the statement that it was okay for the error to occur. And it's on page 17. I can't tell you exactly what paragraph it's on right now, because I have your brief in front of me, but I'm not looking at it. So, you seem to argue that it was okay for the error because the trial court erred. Therefore, it was okay that the defense attorney erred by telling him the wrong sentence as well. And I'm not sure that that's an argument that you meant to make. You can take a second and look at it. It's a real short sentence there, maybe two sentences.
Is it, in fact, petitioner concedes that it's arguable that remand counsel simply erred in advising petitioner that he could receive a 6-year sentence? Is that what you're referring to?
No, it's not there. It's because you refer to the trial court judge. I can actually look at it as well. But I just wanted to make sure that again was not what you meant to say there, because it implies that you're saying that because the trial judge erred, that there could be no error on the part of the defense attorney.
That would not be something that I would argue. And if that is what I misargued, I don't recall doing that, but if it's in here, then that is definitely not something that I would say is a valuable argument.
Okay, thank you. You can continue on.
I have said what I need to say. Our position is quite simple. It's just that the petition itself wasn't sufficient to survive this stage, and also that the evidence was overwhelming in that, you know, it seems unreasonable that this petitioner would have chosen to roll the dice with the trial than take what was a lower sentence that he initially was sentenced to. If there are no more questions, thank you for your time today. I rest on my brief and this argument, and if there's anything that this court requires more from me, I'm happy to provide.
Thank you very much. Mr. Bernstein?
Thank you, Your Honor. I really have nothing to add to my arguments, unless any of Your Honors have.
I do have a question, Mr. Bernstein. Okay. What are you looking for today? Are you looking for a new sentencing hearing? Are you looking for a new trial? Ultimately, what are you asking the court to do?
I think, Your Honor, given the procedural posture, it's a first stage summary dismissal of a post-conviction.
I realize that. What you're saying is you're just simply asking us to send it back for the second stage.
Yes, Your Honor.
And I'm just taking it a step further. What are you ultimately looking for?
Well, I think this is the issues that Mr. Roman raises in his petition, I think need to be sussed out and worked out at the second and third stage. And, you know, where it goes from there would determine my ultimate answer to you. But I think he deserves a chance to prove these allegations. Unless Your Honors have any other questions. We ask that you reverse and remand this for second stage proceedings. Thank you.
I want to thank both sides for your briefs and your arguments this afternoon. Appreciate it. We'll take the case under advisement, and our ruling will be forthcoming. Have a good afternoon to both of you. Thank you.
Thank you.